We were going to talk about a different topic, one that was requested, believe it or not. So we're going to take a look at this, the topic of slavery in the Bible. It is something that we ought to be aware of, we ought to look at, because it is mentioned in the Bible. But there's a reason that we need to understand it, is because there are people that you'll run into who will look at various aspects somehow to discredit what the Bible teaches. If they can find one little opening where they might be able to say, well, the Bible is immoral on this particular ground, then they can say, well, then it's wrong about other things as well. And this is one of the topics that's often brought up. Well, the Bible says that slavery is all right, therefore, because we think slavery is wrong, therefore, the Bible can't be trusted on other topics, and the whole thing can be tossed out. That idea actually alone is a general fallacy. You know, just because a person, even if you take it talk in human terms, just because a person is wrong about one aspect of the Bible, or any topic you want to name. Now, you might ask me about, I can't fix a lawnmower. You might ask me my opinion about an engine or something like that, and I could be completely wrong. Does that mean I'm wrong then about how to cook hamburger on the grill? Well, no, those are two different topics. Just because one is might be wrong one thing doesn't necessarily mean I'm really wrong about other things. But when we talk about God's laws are perfect. And there is a point that needs to be made. God's is perfect. Everything he does is perfect. What we should find in the scriptures is there is no errors of any sort. And so there is a small point that can be conceded, is that some people are correct. If there is something wrong in the scriptures, we got a problem. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16, it says, all scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be adequate, equipped for every good work. God's laws equip us for everything that's good. It's there for our learning, it's for our teaching, it comes from the mouth of God. It is as flawless as God himself is flawless. And it would be a strike against the authority of the scriptures if it was proven that the Bible was morally wrong, even on one issue. Now the issue that's often raised, like I said, is that of slavery. Slavery has been thoroughly rejected in the United States and in most of the world. But slavery existed in the times of the Bible. So the argument basically is, what kind of moral code could the Bible have if it allows slavery to exist? Now, beyond the defense of the scriptures, and as we're going to go into this, we're going to talk about what the Bible actually teaches about slavery. Beyond that, we need to also understand the concept of slavery, because since it was prevalent in biblical times, it was often used to illustrate various concepts. For example, in our scripture reading in Romans chapter 6, starting with verse 16, it says, do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves to the one whom you obey, either of sin resulting in death or of obedience resulting in righteousness? But thanks be to God that though you were slaves of sin, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you have been committed, and having been freed from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. So slavery is used to illustrate how we behave towards sin, how we behave towards righteousness. we understand the concept of how slavery worked in the Old Testament, we better understand that concept of righteousness and sin. Or how the apostles viewed their own lives in Romans chapter 1. Look at verse 1. Paul announces himself as saying, Paul, a bondservant, that's a form of slavery, of Jesus Christ, called as an apostle, set apart for the gospel of God. Paul and the other apostles referred to themselves as slaves. So what were they meaning by that? Or our own relationship with God. Take a look at Luke chapter 17. Luke 17 and verse 10. It says, so too, when you do all the things which you are commanded, you say, we are unworthy slaves, we've only done that which we ought to have done. Again, our relationship with God is seen as a form of slavery. And there's so much more that's based on the scriptures, because the scriptures oftentimes use everyday elements of life to illustrate points so that people would understand. Now, the people in those days lived under that. They saw it day to day. The points that are being made were very clear to them. We look at life a bit different, and sometimes the points go right over our heads. So it's best that we understand a little bit more about what the Bible teaches about slavery. Now, in the Old Testament, and we're going to start there, there were basically two classes of slavery. There were slaves who were Israelites, and there were slaves who were of any other nation, the Gentiles. And we have to understand that distinction. It's not because the Israelites thought themselves to be so much better than all the other nations that they had special classes and special privileges. Rather, it's more like what we do in our country. There are certain laws and certain rights that you have as a citizen, because you are a citizen of this particular country, that you just don't have if you were a visitor of it. Like, for instance, there's rights of citizenship and, you know, inheritance and citizenship and things like that, just because you are part of this country. The Israelites had similar laws. When you were an Israelite, you had certain privileges that weren't extended to non-nation members. But anybody could become an Israelite. That's what's one thing a lot of people overlook. It was possible to be somebody from a Gentile nation and convert to this law of Moses and become an Israelite. It was not a class thing or something was done because of skin color or ethnic background or anything like that. But we need to understand then the causes of slavery. People weren't made slaves just because. There were reasons behind it. One of the primary reasons behind slavery was crimes. Certain crimes brought as a punishment slavery. Take a look at Exodus chapter 22. Exodus chapter 22, and we're going to start with verse 1. Exodus 22, verse 1, it says, if a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it and sells it, he shall pay 5 oxen for the ox and 4 sheep for the sheep. If the thief is caught while breaking in and struck so that he dies, there will be no blood guiltiness on his account. But if the sun is risen on him, there will be blood guiltiness on his account. He shall surely make restitution if he owns nothing. Then he shall be sold for his theft. Here then is one of the reasons for it. Certain crimes carried fines. You stole an ox, you had to pay 5 oxen back. But what if you have no ox? What if you don't have anything? What do? The answer is you went into slavery to pay off the debt. In this case, the debt to society. The debt to the one you stole from. So instead of imprisonment as we're used to today, in the Israelite society, a criminal paid off his debt to society by working. In our view of crime today, we put people in prison and society supports them while they stay in prison, doing nothing. Israelite's view was you went out and you worked off the problem that you caused. So it worked out a little bit differently. Another reason, though, and it's related to the one before, is that you could have debt. And if you could not pay your bills, one could voluntarily basically sell himself into slavery to pay off the bills. In Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 39 through 41, Leviticus 25, starting with verse 39, if a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regard to you that he sells himself to you, you shall not subject him to a slave service. He shall be with you as a hired man, as if he were a sojourner. He shall serve with you until the year of Jubilee. He shall then go out from you, he and his sons with him, and shall go back to his family, that he may return to the property of his forefathers. Now notice how this is worded. You're not a slave as in the rest of the world's term of slavery, even though they still call it slavery. A person who had to go into debt, couldn't make his bills, could voluntarily put himself into slavery to the one he owns, and that man then treated him as a hired servant. The wages he would normally would make would go towards paying off the debt. Knows a man can choose to go into slavery because of his debt. Now, along with it, a little more controversial, a little farther in that passage, in Leviticus 25, verse 45, it says, then too, it is out of the sons of the sojourners who live as aliens among you that you may gain acquisition, and out of them, and out of their families who are with you, whom you that they will have produced in your land, they also may become your possessions. You may even bequeath them to your sons and after you to receive as a possession. You can use them as permanent slaves. But in respect to your countrymen, the sons of Israel, you shall not rule with severity over one another. So what is possible is that in some of the, it was allowed basically if you had family members in other, because of people visiting in the country, they could actually sell off some of the family members to be slaves to pay off the debt. The reasoning behind it is because they were benefiting from the person's expenses. They were benefiting from the debt they was incurring, so therefore they also had an obligation to help pay it off. So in other words, if you were back in those days and your mom and dad couldn't make the bills, and dad maybe took the first step and sold himself into slavery and still can't make the bills, guess what? He starts selling off the kids. They start working on helping the family pay off the bills too. You could also have slaves, as it was mentioned here, slaves from other nations. Take a look back at verse 44. It says, as for your male and female slaves whom you may have, you may acquire male and female slaves from the pagan nations that are around you. Other nations sold off slaves, and the Israelites were allowed to buy slaves from other nations, to acquire them in that form. What wasn't allowed, though, was forced slavery. Take a look at Exodus 21 and verse 16. Exodus 21, verse 16. He who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or he's found in his possession, shall surely be put to death. What was not allowed under Israelite society, and it carried a death penalty, was for somebody to take another person and force them into slavery, kidnapping them and making them a slave. It carried a death penalty. Now, in also the Bible, we need to examine the treatment of slaves, because it's not what you might expect. See, the slave owners were restricted in their behavior. it was seen as, slavery was seen as something that was mutually beneficial, both to the owner and to the slave. Let's go back to Leviticus 25. Should have had you hold your finger there. But back to Leviticus 25. And we're going to look at verse 43. Leviticus 25, verse 43, says, "You shall not rule over him with severity, but you are to revere your God." Slaves were not to be treated harshly. They were to be considered basically as hired help, which in real reality they really were. They just had limited choices of where they were hired out to. But they were to be treated as hired help. In fact, in Job chapter 31, Job makes an interesting statement. It gives us some insight, again, to slavery in those days. Job 31, starting with verse 13. Says, "If I despise the claim of my male or female slaves when they file a complaint against me, what then shall I do when God arises? And when he calls me to account, what will I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make him? And the same one fashioned us in the womb." Notice what Job says. Of his, the ones that he had, the servants, the slaves that he owned, he said, "Now I understand and I recognize that God made him as well as me. We're equals in God's sight. And so if a slave has a complaint against me, I better listen to him. Because otherwise, when I have a problem with God, will God listen to me?" Now that's quite a bit different if you think about how we're told about slavery in this country and how slavery exists in the past. This is not the same type of idea. People looked at those who were slaves as equals. They had the right to complain. They had the right to file petitions against their master, to say, "Hey, women, this is not right." And Job at least says, "Hey, I listen to them because I recognize that God expects me to." Continuing on then, other than also noticing that slaves had, by implication here, slaves had rights. In Levitical law, the slaves had the right to have days off. In Exodus chapter 20, and in verse 10, in the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20, verse 10, when it talks about the Sabbath day, it says, "But the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your sons or your daughters or your male or your female servants or your cattle or your sojourner who stays with you." The law that says everybody is to take a day off applied to everybody. Slaves too. Now think about that. If you think about all the other countries in the world, and if you got into debt and you had to sell yourself off, who would you want to sell yourself off to? See, this group offers you an automatic one day off every week. Not only that, but under the Old Testament law, everybody also participated in the feast. In Deuteronomy chapter 19, I'm sorry, 16. Deuteronomy 16, starting with verse 9. It says, "You shall count 7 weeks for yourselves, and you shall begin to count 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the standing grain. Then you shall celebrate the feast of the weeks of the Lord your God with a tribute of a freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give just as the Lord your God blessed you. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you and your son and your daughter and your male and female servants and the Levite who is in your own town and the stranger that is, and the orphan and the widow who are in your midst in the place where the Lord your God chooses to establish his name. You shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt and you shall be careful to observe these statutes. When it's time for a celebration, everybody celebrates. Why? Because Israelites were one-time slaves themselves in Egypt. So everyone's going to be treated equally. So you had holidays, just like everybody else. Now, of course, just because you have slaves and they're being treated well on the general thing, and they get days off, does that mean everybody's going to behave? Well, think about it for a little bit. One of the reasons some people became slaves is because they were criminals. Now, if you're willing to steal from somebody and it caused you obligations, you couldn't pay it off, does that necessarily mean you're going to be nice to the person you stole from? No, not necessarily. You're going to have problems. And so there were laws that dealt with the protection of slaves. Take a look at Exodus chapter 21, and starting with verse 20. Exodus 21, starting with verse 20. If a man strikes his male or female slave with a rod and he dies at his hand, he shall be punished. If, however, he survives a day or two, no vengeance shall be taken, for he is his property. Okay, you have to understand back in those days, there was no sophisticated crime scene analysis where you could go back and determine exactly the cause of somebody's death. So judges were given a very simple rule. If a slave was beaten and died soon after, the slave owner was punished by the law, which is basically what he's saying is that the slave owner was put to death. If you murder somebody, you die. Okay. So if the slave, after a punishment, dies shortly thereafter, the slave owner is put to death. If the slave lives for several days, and the assumption is that the death was due to other causes and was just a coincidence. After all, people do get old, they do die, they get diseases, other things might happen. And like I said, we don't have a time and era where people could do sophisticated analysis of actually what was going on. So basically the law would give the slave owner a reason to pause. If he beat his slave too severely and he died, guess what? His life was on the line. What would that do to you if you knew that? Especially even if, say, like was an older slave. He's already frail. Well, if he dies shortly thereafter, even if it's unrelated, as far as the laws were concerned, you would die. It would cause people to pause and think and keep it from getting too severe. Even if you were dealing with a slave who was being very unruly and very obnoxious and causing you all sorts of headaches, maybe even stealing from you, yes, there would have to be punishment. After all, these are criminals. But you couldn't get out of hand. In addition to that, in Exodus 21, verse 16, or 26, sorry. Exodus 21, starting with verse 26, says, if a man strikes the eye of his male or female slave and destroys it, he shall let him go free on the count of his eye. And if he knocks out a tooth of his male or female slave, he shall let him go free on account of his tooth. In other words, if you cause permanent injury, the slave automatically, immediately is freed. You lose your servant. Again, it's not saying that you can't punish for disobedience, But again, there's laws and restrictions to keep it from getting out of hand. Likely, this law is in addition to the law that already stands in the book, that if you cause somebody permanent injury, you receive the same injury back. Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 19 and verse 21. Deuteronomy 19. And in verse 21, thus you shall not show pity, life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. That was the law that the judges were given. So if somebody causes another human being permanent injury, the same injury was, as if it was found guilty, the same injury was given to him as part of the sentence. But in addition to that, slaves were allowed to go free from that. But most fascinating of all the laws is the one in Deuteronomy 23 and in verse 15. It says, you shall not hand over to his master a slave who has escaped from his master to you. He shall live with you in your midst in the place which he shall choose in one of your towns where it pleases him. You shall not mistreat him. Now of all the laws, this sounds so strange to us. In the Israelite society, if a slave decides to leave, no one could force him to go back. There was no runaway slave law. Or the runaway slave law was the slave had the right to run away. Now think about that. You have servants that you have, they're paying off their debts, and if you mistreat them, what are they going to do? They're going to run off. And you can't give them back. No one can force them to go back. And so it caused a good balance of fair treatment. In addition, some of the other interesting provisions is that slaves could inherit. Take a look at Genesis chapter 15. Genesis 15. And in verse 2, Genesis chapter 15, verse 2 says, Abraham said, O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless? And the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abraham said, since you have given me no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir. When a slave is born inside of the house of a master, he becomes a potential heir. For a childless couple. He had actually a right to inheritance. The oldest one born in the house became the heir of the estate. In addition to that, when a slave was freed, he was given provisions. He was not sent away empty-handed and say, I've given you everything you wanted, now you're on your own. Now the master still owed him more. Take a look at Deuteronomy 15. Deuteronomy 15, starting with verse 12. If your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, then he shall serve you 6 years, but in the seventh year you shall set him free. When you set him free, you shall not send him away empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally from your flock, and from your threshing floor, and from your wine vat, you shall give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you. You're supposed to set him up so they can restart life. Now that makes perfectly good sense when you understand that, like they said, they didn't have bankruptcy laws back then. You get yourself over your head in debt, you paid it off by being a slave to the one you owed to. But when he got done, that person had an obligation to set you up back in life. You benefited him. He got the benefits from it. He pays you back by helping you establish yourself again so that you don't immediately end up back into slavery once again. Now, in that slavery, there was different durations. anyone who was went into slavery could be bought back. In fact, it was an obligation by relatives to do so. In Leviticus chapter 25, Leviticus 25 and starting with verse 47, it says, "Now if the means of a stranger or a sojourner with you become sufficient, and a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regards to him as to sell himself to the stranger who is sojourning with you, or to the descendants of a stranger's family, then he shall have redemption right after he has been sold. One of his brethren may redeem him, or his uncle or his uncle's son may redeem him, or one of his blood relatives or from his family may redeem him, or if he prospers, he may redeem himself." Why was that? Well, particularly this law was if somebody ended up getting sold off to a non-Israelite, someone who didn't obey these particular commands, where all these rights were given to slaves. Well, if you got sold off to there, somebody could buy you back, so you stayed within the country. In fact, if you had sufficient means, you could buy yourself off. And there were prices that were set, and there were reasonable prices that were set in the law. But in addition to that, a Israelite slave could only be held for 6 years. That was one of the rights, the privileges of being an Israelite. The maximum term that you can be held as a slave is 6 years, period. In Exodus 21 and in verse 7, "If a man sells his daughter as a female slave, she shall not go free as a..." Oops, I got the wrong passage here. Mix my passages up. But basically, you got 6 years. I think the one I read earlier was the one I exchanged. My apologies for doing so. But in addition, going back to Leviticus 25, this was the one about the females being... Deuteronomy 15:12. Thank you. Let me back up there. Deuteronomy 15:12. Yeah, if your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, he shall serve you 6 years, but in the seventh year you shall set him free. And then in addition, every 50 years was a year of jubilee. And it doesn't matter what year you happen to be on in your payment, on the 50th year, always all slaves went free, period. In Leviticus 25, verse 10, it says, "You should thus proclaim the 50th year and proclaim a release throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be jubilee to you, and each of you shall return to his own property, and each of you shall return to his own family." Every 50 years, everybody got to go back home, period. And again in chapter 25, verse 39, "If your countryman of yours becomes so poor as regards to that he sells himself to you, you shall not subject him to a slave servant. He shall be to you as a hired man, as if he were a sojourner. He shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. Then he shall go out from you, he and his sons with him, and shall go back to his family." So once the year of Jubilee came, all the slaves went home free. Now, one of the things that might seem odd is because slaves were treated so well under the Israelite walls, and because they had so much that they could do, slaves basically enjoyed the right of being able to choose to stay. In Deuteronomy chapter 15 and verse 16, says, if you come, if it shall come about, if he shall say, I will not go out from you, because he loves you and your household, since he fared well with you, then you shall take an owl and pierce it through his ear in the door, and he shall be your servant forever. Also you shall do likewise to your maidservant. Slaves enjoyed a good life. They had a lot of rights. They were fed. They were clothed. They had a place to live. Sometimes life as a slave would be preferable to somebody who tries to make it on their own. They just can't do it. Now, slaves, Gentile slaves, didn't have the right of automatic freedom. But all those other rights and protections still were given to them. Now, I ran a bit over time, so I'm going to pause here. And we're going to finish this off tonight, as well as go into talking about how this is applied in the New Testament. But one of the things we have to understand is in the Scriptures, sin is seen as slavery. And there's a lot of applications we can make from that. But there's one particular passage I want you to look at in John chapter 8. John chapter 8, starting with verse 31. John 8, and in verse 31, Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples of mine, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And they answered him and said, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it you say that you become free? Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave of sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The Son remains forever. So if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. We have, as children of God, the rights to freedom. We can be brought out of the sin and the slavery that it presents to us. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no time better than right now to become a child of God. If there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like the prayers of the brethren on the behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.